Is Fiona here? Good, okay. There's that woman out in California. She keeps adding to the house because she believes that by adding to the house, the ghosts of those who were killed by her husband's business will not come and take her away. And of course, both Jimmy and I are going to live for quite a long time because we have things we have to do. And I've already promised Fiona that when she's ready to be a poet, I'll be happy to mentor the third generation of Senenis writing great poetry. So, would you hold these, sir? We'd like to sell some books tonight. Now, I'm going to read a few poems of mine from the Brentwood Anthology. Many of the people in this anthology are here tonight. So if you buy a copy for $15, you can get many of the poems signed. And of course, you may know that if you get all the signatures, then you're entitled to a free lunch. So that's really good. It's like that movie with Tom Hanks where he had all the signatures from A Great Day in Harlem, except for Benny Golson. And in the movie, he winds up in the airport and Golson's there. And I guess the story of the movie is him getting the last autograph. This poem is called The Hotel Earl. Correspondences. Tom Russell, in a concert at Pittsburgh Center for the Arts, mentions the Hotel Earl in Greenwich Village, a cheap place for musicians to stay back in the day. Then in Lisa Jarno's biography of Robert Duncan, she mentions Duncan stayed at the Hotel Earl in April 1962 on one of his visits to New York City. Correspondences. What do you do if you're two white girls and a black guy? Judy Jones, Sue Rare, and Lenny King. It's 1962, and you've just met in New York City, and you're in bed together at the Hotel Earl. What do you do? Well, you phone Michael back in Carlisle, 2 a.m. to share the joy. Correspondences. The Hotel Earl became a welfare hotel and burned down. Bob Nelson's father lived there. He was murdered in 1971 in Central Park. I remember a nearby mission. They had soup and donuts. You had to listen to the sermon first. Thank you. This poem is called Outpost. Push pins arrayed on the map. Blue, red, yellow, green, some black along the coastline. Debris from the ceiling falls into my coffee. The weather keeps us inside. It makes the TV pictures snowy. Some of the rooms are empty and unheated. They call me the fisherman. Now that may baffle you, but it's a poem about John Jesus Angleton, who was a significant dark man of the CIA for many years. This poem's called Imagination for Suzanne. From the balcony of the rented vacation apartment the two of you share in northern Arkansas, Horseshoe Bend, you look down to the lake in the moonlight, where two men are in the water, skinny dipping, one your poet lover, the other Benedict, the current pope. This is the magic of it. He can call on the great or humble, the real or fanciful, living or dead, to his side in the moonlight for your astonishment. Just two older men enjoying the water on a summer's night. Thank you. It's a small imagist poem in Suzanne's house. Everywhere one looks, there is a treat. A painting of red poppies in a vase. A pewter tea service. So I've become old and slow, and because of that, I don't publish a lot. But I've got a lady in Philadelphia, Rosemary Capello, who's a big fan of my work. I cannot turn her down or fail to send something to her. So I'm in this 2018 issue of Philadelphia Poets, and I'm going to read the three poems that are in there. The first one is called Pedro's Dream. I don't know if you were at the reading I did with Mark Jampol at the White Whale recently, but I read this poem that night as well. Pedro's Dream. I wake in a painted stillness. People bargain beneath the veil. Others slouch toward disease. Everything is for sale here. I know my way out, my stick tapping against the walls. On the river, a boat crammed with young and noisy women. The moon shines. They sway to the tune of their own singing. My oars catch and die on the black top of the river. Thank you. One of the things that we think we know about poetry, especially from attending readings at Hemingway's, is that people write about their families, their parents and their children and their grandparents and so on, which is fine. I haven't done a lot of that, but I have recently written these two poems about my father, which I'm going to read. It's in this Philadelphia Poets. One is called Two Father Cameos. One, my father was an industrial engineer, part of the team that developed the Kent micronite filter. Two, my father loved to go hunting with his beagles. He admired his guns for the beautiful machines that they were. Eventually, he left the guns at home when he and his dogs went for the woods and the fields. Thank you. Iowa cornfields. My father is driving the flat roads at excessive speeds. There has been an argument with my mother. I remember especially the sign Low Moor, another small town in the blasted dark. I always thought I should have gotten The Late Show, maybe after Jack Parr. But if I had, I mean, you can see how super Don would be as an assistant. He's a veritable Durward Kirby. My mom dated Durward Kirby. That was years ago. Here's a poem called The Innocent. It was nice to have company on the drive from Toronto to Pittsburgh. 7 hours. When you dropped him off, he handed you a piece of paper with a phone number on it. You'll like her, he said. She's into chains as well as leather. Now, Kay mentioned that she had run into... Kay still here? Maybe not. Oh, there she is. Mentioned she'd run into Richard Dillon in a church recently. This poem is called Think Tank. Kay, I'll remember this. For several years, Richard Dillon and I ran a think tank on Saturday afternoons on the second floor of City Books. Many people came to converse with us. One fellow I called Robert Zero because he was a mystery man. He came through Pittsburgh a few times a year and usually paid us a visit. Robert had pointed ears like Spock, was vaguely Asiatic and very intellectual. He believed that the decline of the West began with Philip the Fair and the end of feudalism. Two famous people who refused to meet with us, Chelsea Clinton and Richard Florida. The hell with them. Howard, you still here? Okay, this poem is called Mr. Addis. A man of great dignity, he's in his 90s now, still wears a suit when he goes to the grocery store, doesn't drive at night. Despite being remarried, he still publishes an in memoriam to Maddie in the newspaper each year. At a staff meeting, I accused him of being arbitrary and capricious. No more staff meetings. I'm going to read one more poem. I read years ago at the Three Rivers Arts Festival, back when Vince Zepp was running that, the poetry part of it, and I read on a huge stage with a grand piano and a big Iron City advertisement on the back, and I read my poem, Death of a Caseworker, and Mr. Addis and his wife were there, and afterwards they came up and said, he said, "Well, Mr. Worcester, now I know what you think of your job." So as Dad Shook's daughter, Muffy, said years ago when Grapey said, "Should I read one more poem?" She said, "Read one more, Grapey, but make it a good one." So anyway, I'll read a poem about a former member. The poem is called Sexual Identity. Tom came into a small inheritance and got a sex change. He had always been gender uncomfortable. Then she became a cloistered nun. Now she's buried up on the hill behind the nunnery, below the pines. Some days you can almost hear her singing from beneath the loam. Thank you very much. We thank you.